G'day, Dr. Carl here. Back in 1986, I could not wait to see teacher Krista McAuliffe on the Space Shuttle Challenger launch into space.
Roger, Challenger. Obviously a major malfunction.
We could not believe what we were seeing. The Challenger Legacy. To hear more, search for Science Friction and look out for The Challenger Legacy. Find it wherever you get your podcasts or on the ABC Listen app.
Hello, it's the music show on ABC Radio National. I'm Andrew Ford. That's Rob Hurst on the drums with Midnight Oil, very much the powerhouse behind the band. I'm afraid today's show, we're going to be looking at the lives and artistry of some musicians who have died. Later on today's show, Erin Hellyard will be in. He's the artistic director of Pinchgut Opera, and he's going to take us through a new album of Vivaldi's opera Farinacce, which Pinchgut recorded in 2019. It features Max Riebel, Jacqueline Dark and Taryn Fiebig, three of the finest Australian classical singers, and not just classical singers, who have died in the interim. But first, Rob Hurst. Rob Hurst, drummer and principal songwriter of Midnight Oil, died this week at the age of 70, 3 years after his diagnosis with pancreatic cancer. We spoke to Rob quite a few times on the music show, as did our Radio National colleagues, and he told Into the Music back in 2014 how the adolescent Midnight Oil had started out.
We soon recognised that no one was going to give this schoolboy band any gigs, because we were ready to play really as soon as Pete auditioned. Jim and I already had some original songs worked up, and we had cover version songs of Beatles songs and Jethro Tull, and we had this weird mix of pop and early punk and prog, and we were ready to go. So what I did was, with the lighting guy, Craig Alexander, I decided I'd shortcut that whole waiting around for an agent to take notice, and I'd go and book gigs myself in the September school holidays, which I did, down the south coast from Sydney all the way down to the Victorian border, and then the next year up the north coast. Then over the school holidays, we'd come back, and with the band and our friend Peter Edwards, the bouncer, who would sort of basically hold back these imagined crowds, which never really materialised. But it was so funny, you know, I'd go down and I'd pay old Mrs. Johnson $6 for the hire of the Bermagui School of Arts or the CWA Hall, and she'd say, don't make a mess, and you know, you understand you can't stay in it overnight, you know. So we used to sleep on the beaches. And that way we got experience. So we did that over two summers whilst we were still at school. And then by the time we got back, then I could show an agent. Our first agent happened to be a fellow called Jason Wild, who turned up in a pink tuxedo and this very kind of 70s swept back hair. And so Jason took a punt on us and booked us into a topless bar called Knight's Inn in Sussex Street in Sydney. So we survived that. So after we'd done a few of these exploratory gigs, finally we got the Bingo, which was like the Royal Antler Hotel, because we thought that with Pete as a body surfer, that we should actually try to get a surfing following. After all, Jim and I had already written songs like Surfing with a Spoon, even back then. First night, there weren't very many people, maybe 50 or 60, and then we went back a week later and there was about 150, and then we started packing this surf pub out.
The late Rob Hurst on Radio National's Into the Music in 2014, talking about the origins of the Oils. As well as many years with Midnight Oil, Rob was also a member of the Backsliders. And to celebrate their 25th anniversary, Rob came into the music show studio, and he didn't just bring a drum kit on this occasion.
I've been relegated to the washboard, Andy.
Oh. Have you brought the washboard in today?
I have.
Fantastic.
I mean, would you like something washed?
Are you going to use it in the second?
I'm going to abuse it tonight at Vanguard.
No, but I'm just wondering whether maybe you could demonstrate it for us. If you're not going to play, if you're not actually going to play it in the second tune that you do, Rob's got up and he's left his drum kit and he's...
Well, actually, when Rob joined the band all those years ago now, it's like 10 or 11 years ago, whatever, one of the things that he said when we spoke on the phone about when Rob said he'd like to join, but one thing I don't do is I won't play washboard, and I don't do hat is another one.
Right, okay.
So, but it just the washboard was just, I think it was in the studio at the time when we were recording this song by Leadbelly called "Relax Your Mind."
Yes,
oh, here it is,
and here it is. He's got the washboard.
Yeah.
You got the right to play.
We could.
Okay.
I can't do it on this guitar. But...
Relax your mind, relax your mind. It take a great long time. But one time, you got to relax your mind.
What is that in any sense a genuine washboard? I mean, you know, could you wash your clothes with
this? Absolutely. In fact, this was given to members of Midnight Oil by the Pale Riders. I don't know whether you've ever had the Pale Riders in.
No, don't really think so.
Great three-piece band from Tasmania that toured with the Oils years and years ago. And I'm just cleaning out all my bits and pieces and found it, and it's the best-sounding washboard. It gets your clothes just sparkling as well.
And what do you wear thimbles on your fingers?
I have a thimble singular.
One thimble. Right.
It's the only one I could find in the
corner. Okay, but normally you would have a couple, would you?
Couple, yeah.
And you'd get a, wow, it's a wonderful sound.
It's a great sound.
You should work on it. You should become a washboard virtuoso.
Virtuoso, yeah. There's a few people around that are excellent members of, I think, Mick Conway's band.
Yeah. Yes, of course.
They set a high standard.
We'll be right back.
yonder, up in the tree, there's a rope hanging just for me. Without a warning, without a warning, things are piling up to break me down. Feeling blue, 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 blue. Feeling blue, 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 blue. Feeling blue, 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 blue. I'm feeling blue, I'm feeling blue.
Feeling Blue, that's from the Backsliders 2011 album Starvation Box, featuring the drums of Rob Hurst, who has died at the age of 70. Let's finish by going back to Midnight Oil. We spoke to Rob in 2004 after he'd written a memoir called Willie's Bar and Grill. It was largely about his experience with the Oils touring through the United States after 9/11.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very different time to be in, to be hanging around the United States. In fact, we weren't even sure that we should go because, you know, straight after September 11th, we did a round of phone calls saying, look, we can go, but is actually anyone going to come to the shows? Because most of the artists that had scheduled tours had cancelled. And, you know, in typical Midnight Oil bloody-minded fashion, we said, you know, we'll go forth and spread the gospel and we'll get people out and get them drunk again and get them thinking about other things apart from terrorism and anthrax and bomb scares and all the other horrible afflictions that were being visited upon the United States at the time. And in actual fact, that's what happened. It was not only an extremely interesting time and at times scary to be there, but it was also quite joyful because we had people coming out of their homes perhaps for the first time since the event, and they were in serious party mode.
Yes. The Oils, of course, I mean, had always had an interesting relationship with America because, I mean, you were big there in the late 80s and early 90s. And I get the impression, particularly reading your book, that some of them were a bit surprised to see you back there again nearly 10 years later.
That's right, yes. Well, it's a long, sad story, but during the 90s, what happened was we toured less in the United States and Canada and also in Europe, which had been bigger for the band, really, than the States had been. And that was because if we hadn't stopped touring, we would have just exploded like the drummer in Spinal Tap. And, you know, we'd really been touring since the late 70s, 78, 79, and very hard, initially in Sydney, then around Australia, and then increasingly internationally. And by the time 92, 93 came around, we were really quite road burnt and we needed a break. But we still wanted to record. And so We made a series of albums in the 90s, including a collection album and a live album, and we made Capricorn Air, but also made an album in response to, well, was kind of triggered by the response to One Nation, a very angry kind of album called Redneck Wonderland, and we made a much more atmospheric album called Breathe, both in Sydney and in New Orleans. So we continued to record, but we just couldn't get around to this long touring. So what happened overseas was all our allies in the recording business moved on or headhunted or disappeared to old people's homes or something, and then we had no allies. And so gradually, you know, our profile, as they would say, diminished. So by the time we organised this Capricornia tour, I think it was 7 years since we'd done a decent tour. But a lot of people came back still to see us, so which was quite remarkable and gave us the impetus to go back another three times before the Australian tour in which Pete left.
The sort of the repertoire of Midnight Oil includes a lot of political songs or songs with a political edge to them, some of which is, you know, quite specifically targeted at American administrations. I mean, was it considered perhaps not appropriate to sing songs like U.S. Forces?
Yeah, U.S. Forces was actually dropped from the set list, but not while we – not in Canada. You know, this is as soon as we crossed over and did our Toronto and Montreal show.
You opened with U.S. Forces.
We opened and closed with U.S. Forces, which got an enormous reception over the border.
I'm sure it
but,
did.
We figured that if we were going to make that tour, our job at that time for a shell-shocked nation wasn't to rub salt into the wound, really was to lighten up a little on the politics and get people dancing a bit more.
The structure of the book is very interesting. I mean, I said before that the touring runs like the spine through the book. And you're there, you know, on the bus with Willie the tour manager and Slim the driver going from city to city. But much of the book is actually in flashback, isn't it? I mean, it's a very interesting structure.
Yeah, it was actually a kind of necessary structure because, you know, to be frank, a bunch of clammy middle-aged blokes touring America, you know, it's not really making exciting reading. You know, you should really go to a book like Motley Crue's The Dirt or one of the great rock and roll tales of excess, you know, to get the sex, drug and rock and roll aspect. What I tried to do was actually try to marry together what was happening and what it would felt like being in the United States straight after 9/11 with a band that had toured America many times, seeing the differences in the people there and catching up with old friends, but also trying to bring back anecdotes from even the distant past which were relevant to the book. And to be honest, to make it a fun read, you know, the last thing I wanted to do was this serious didactic tome, you know, that would sit under all your other books in the coffee table and then discarded. You know, I wanted something that was actually quite light that you could read in a couple of nights and, you know, I wanted people laughing out loud as well, which is not something you can say normally about most of Midnight Oil's oeuvre.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've written so many of the Oil's songs or co-written them. And I'm wondering the difference between writing a book. I mean, on the one hand, there's writing a diary, which is obviously a private activity. When you know it's going to be published, presumably that changes things in quite a serious manner in terms of your approach to the writing. But how does it actually that connect with the songwriting? Are they all discrete activities?
It's a very good question, and one I actually didn't realise until about halfway through the writing process, because I really didn't know how to make the jump from songwriting to prose. And I was battling this the whole time, and I had to go back to a few of my favourite authors to try to get into the swing of it. And, you know, I guess they would include people like PJ O'Rourke and Bill Bryson, and even way back to people like Charles Bukowski. Not that there's any Burroughs or Bukowski in this book, but just to try to loosen up a bit and try to find my voice without sounding too pretentious. But what happened was one of my daughters plays hockey, and I was speaking to one of the hockey dads one morning, and I told him I had this trouble. I actually can't write this book. I'm still writing songs. And he says, well, don't stop, which was the best advice I could get. So it's actually a book of songs. It's actually a singing book. And it's got rhythm too, because essentially after writing songs, rhythm and melody are the two things which, you know, you can't do without.
U.S. forces give the nod. It's a setback for your country. Bombs and trenches all in rows. Bombs and threats still ask for more.
Midnight Oil, that's US forces from 10987654321. And Rob Hurst was playing the drums. He died this week at the age of 70. And those interviews with Rob came from the music show in 2004, 2011, and also from Into the Music. You're listening to the music show on ABC Radio National. I'm Andrew Ford. And we're going to stay on the subject of memorials because we're going to be talking about three very fine Australian opera performers. They're remembered in a new release of a recording from 2019 by Pinchcut Opera. It's of their production of Vivaldi's opera Farnace, directed by Erin Helliard from the harpsichord. And among the cast are Max Riebel, Jacqueline Dark, and Taryn Fiebig, and they've all died in the intervening years. Erin is in to talk about them and this album. This is how it starts. Yeah. It's music by Vivaldi, the Sinfonia from Farnace, and we heard Pinchgut Opera and the orchestra directed by Erin Helliard. And Erin, welcome back to the music show.
It's lovely to be here.
It's nice to see you. That's how Farnace begins. That's how the Pinchgut Opera production began back in 2019, which, you know, in a sense seems kind of like a really recent date, but actually also feels like a hell of a long time ago.
It's imprinted in my memory because it was right before the pandemic.
Yeah.
And I remember we had wonderful audiences and Pinchgut was at its height. And then, of course, the pandemic occurred. And like many in the performing arts, we faced so many challenges. So this was our last show before we shut down for that period. And yeah, it's really etched in my memory.
It's etched in your memory, I'm sure, for other reasons. Because this particular production and this recording, which has just come out, features the voices of three remarkable Australian singers who have all died since, Taryn Phoebig, Max Riebel and Jacqueline Dark. And we're going to hear from each of them during the course of our conversation. But maybe you could say a word about the company to start with, because, you know, how long have you been going? I feel as though that Pinchgut is almost as old as my time on the music show.
We've been going for over almost 20 years.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah.
Oh, your babies then.
Yeah, exactly. But we've survived, which I think is wonderful. And Pinchgut Opera, for some of the listeners who may not know us, we're based in Sydney, but we specialise in Baroque opera and in particular reviving unknown and neglected masterpieces, of which Farnace is one.
Let's start with, let's listen to an aria sung by Max Riebel. Before we talk about Max, we're going to hear an aria which is not from Farnace. So could you tell us how on earth this works?
So this production, Farnace, is a really interesting opera by Vivaldi. It's his last opera, but it's actually a revision of a work he wrote in 1727. So this is from 1738. And when he revised works, he often recycled or reused arias from other operas. Now, the interesting thing about the 1738 version is he only wrote two acts, or he revised two acts. And so my job was to reconstruct the third act for this 2019 production we did in Sydney. And so I did exactly what Vivaldi would have done. And I turned his other works, found arias that fit, and then put the new words of the libretto into them. So some of the arias on the recording are indeed from other Vivaldi operas. And some of them he did himself, and some of them I did.
And so we're going to hear an aria which comes from Tito Manlio. The character that Max Riebel is singing here, Gilade, is actually a character from Farnace.
That's correct.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
It's quite complicated.
Yeah, well, what is, I mean, amazing. This opera serie at the time was designed to be modular, as it were.
Yeah.
And often the Italian has rhyming schemes that just work across a whole bunch of, it's a bit like an IKEA, you know, chair. A little bit works on another piece of furniture. It's a sort of standard fit.
Yeah.
So the standard Italian, you would find these rhyming couplets, and I would go searching through the operas, finding something that matched, and then, of course, lo and behold, it works perfectly.
Yes.
And often the word, the adjective in the Italian that receives all the coloratura, you know, like glory or death or something, is often in the new text also a very meaningful word. So it was a really interesting process.
Lo scherzo, 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 lo scherzo
That's the voice of the late Max Riewoll singing as Gilarde in Pinchgut Opera's production of Vivaldi's Farnace in 2019. And on today's music show, I'm talking to Erin Hellyard, who is the artistic director and was the conductor of that production. Max's voice was beautiful, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we released this recording because we wanted to honour the legacy of these three artists, and it was just by chance, in a way, that they were in this production, though Jackie and Max worked together on a show after this, and of course I'd worked with Taz over her whole career. And there was a moment, you know, during the pandemic and also afterwards, it was quite sad because Taz left us in 2021, Max left us in 2022, and Jackie left us in 2023. So it was every year, you know, and cancer took them all. Mm. Taz was in this stage when we did Farnace, she was battling, you know, and you can hear it in the recording, which is quite touching. Her breath control was not what it used to be, but her artistry remained the same. Mm. And Max's voice, as you say, absolutely stunning. He was the most wonderful man to work with, very calm, gentle presence. And he was really at the height of his powers. And that's why he was very proud of Farnace. Mm. We did a Cavalli opera afterwards, which didn't have nearly all the pyrotechnics we've just heard. And so I really wanted to honour him and thank God for the ABC, because we recorded three of these performances, and it was only the last year I found some money from some wonderful donors at Pinchgut, and we worked with Thomas Grubb, and he went through all the performances that the ABC recorded, and we created this edited version, of which I'm really proud, and it's something I probably, one of my most proud moments, this production, but not only to bring this project about, so that we can listen and evaluate the beauty of these now sadly deceased singers.
The last time we heard Max's voice on the music show, he was singing Kate Bush's Running Up That Hill for one of our cover stories. And each of these singers was actually surprisingly flexible.
Exactly.
I mean, I remember Taryn's Eliza Doolittle, for instance, and Jackie Dark was maybe the most flexible of them all. There was nothing she wouldn't try.
Yeah, extraordinary. And you're absolutely right to bring up Max's, you know, relationship with popular music through his family, but also he was an extraordinary improviser. So again, on this disc, we worked together on All the Ornaments. That is a great feature of Baroque opera, and he had a natural affinity for it. Jackie was an extraordinary actress. I mean, the funniest person I've worked with. Her voice was more of a Wagnerian, I mean, she was more at home in the much larger, later 19th century rep. I remember when we started doing Baroque music, she was quite nervous, but she has an extraordinary presence and dramatic control that was stunning to work with. And of course, Taz was such a beautiful singer in the Baroque, and she was naturally led to that word-oriented repertoire, you know, where the words mean you really need to bring something to the repertoire to make it expressive.
Let's listen to Jackie. This is Jacqueline Dark as Berenice from Farnace, the Vivaldi opera, and the recording made in 2019 from the Pinchgut opera production.
Oh,
My Riposo. That's the sound of Jacqueline Dark, singing an aria as Berenice in Farinace, the Vivaldi opera, Pinchgut opera, directed by Erin Helliard, who is my guest on today's music show. She was also a very good actor.
Oh, she was phenomenal. She could capture, in fact, Taz and Jackie, in the same sort of school, they knew how to capture the audience's attention, but they most importantly knew also when to step back, you know. So there was a wonderful collegiality with both of those artists, but they were, you know, as soon as Taz or Jackie stepped out on the stage, you knew there was a great artist there who understood the theatre. And Max, it was sort of sad because he was just beginning to start that. I mean, he was in his early 30s when he passed away, which is really tragic. And this is at a time when artists usually get that experience, which of course Taz and Jackie had through Opera Australia and many other productions.
Yes. And good colleagues too.
Extraordinary. I mean,
good people to work with, good people to have in the rehearsal room.
Wonderful people, all three of them, yeah.
I don't know how, I mean, I've not been in a Pinchgut rehearsal room, not for any length of time anyway, and I'm not sure how it works there, but I assume there is always a kind of element of collegiality.
Look, it's one of the most wonderful parts of a production in a way, because you make friends in the rehearsal room that are lifelong connections. But also there's a lot of play. I mean, I think when we have, in fact, the lead on this recording is Christopher Lowry, who's a wonderful friend and an international countertenor who's based overseas now. And he's the star aria in this disc is his Gelido in Ogni Vena. I encourage everyone to listen to it. It's extraordinary. But it was one of his, you know, second productions with Pinchgut, and he left saying, you know, when I come out and work with Australian singers, I love the sense of play and experimentation and comedy. I mean, there's a lot of improvisation, and this was quite a dark show. So to deal with some of those dark themes, Jackie and Taz, for example, would just play around and experiment, but be very, very funny as well. And I think Chris really enjoyed that way of working, because we worked really hard, but at the same time, I think it's important to let off a little steam.
We'll finish by listening to Taran Fiebig, but before we do, what's coming up for Pinchgut?
This year is really exciting. I'm just about to give a performance of the Bach Goldberg Variations in Melbourne, which is wonderful. And then we start our Pinchgut season here in Sydney. And we're starting off with a wonderful orchestral program of Telemann and Bach. And then I'm really excited about, with Dean Bryant at the Rospacker Theatre, we're doing the Australian premiere of Alessandro Scarlatti's The First Murder, which has a wonderful cast of God, the Devil, Adam, Eve, Cain and Abel. And then we follow it with a little tiny opera, which is based around the Bach Coffee Cantata. And then we end the year with Neil Armfield directing Handel's Semele. So it's a really exciting year.
Oh, that is a great year. Yeah, good. Well, I look forward to all of that. Now, Taran Fiebig had just been announced as the lead role in my revival of my Rembrandt's Wife.
Of course.
Which was going to be in 2020, which was, of course, a COVID casualty. So
yes,
I never got to hear her sing my music, and it's one of the great regrets of my life. But we can hear her singing now the role of Celinda. Would you like to say something about this lovely, slow aria, Leggi al Meno Tirana Infidele?
Yes, Taz was in the character of the show. The wonderful thing about Farinacci is it had three very strong female leads. In fact, Vivaldi seems to be drawn to operas which had strong female characters in it. And she's the sister of Farinacci, but she falls in love with Max in the show. So there's a lovely moment, but she's in this aria, she's castigating her brother for being too harsh and cruel. And it's wonderful in this opera because all the female characters tend to talk back quite strongly to their male counterparts, which is quite different to a lot of Baroque opera. But you'll hear the simplicity of Vivaldi's writing and the gorgeous lyrical phrasing that Taz was renowned for.
Thank you very much indeed, Erin, for coming in, and let's listen to the voice of Taryn Phoebig with Pinchgut Opera. the late Taryn Fiebig as Celinda in Farnace, and that album by Pinchgut Opera, featuring Taryn and Max Riebel and Jacqueline Dark, is out now, and Erin Hellyard and Pinchgut continue. Erin's Goldberg variations are in Melbourne shortly, and you'll find the details on the Music Show's website. That's it for now. Next time on the show, which I will remind you if you haven't worked it out yet, is on Saturdays and Sunday afternoons at 2 o'clock. We'll have Ursula Jovic singing Nina Simone.
Sometimes I find myself alone regretting some little foolish thing, some simple thing that I've done. I try so hard, so please don't let me be misunderstood.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.